Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 412, titled, The Engineer Intends to Wreck the Train. This is being recorded on June 2nd of 2003. WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. Recent programs streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs at a longer URL linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Spitfire stocks all of the programs I've recorded over the years, the For the Record shows, the archive shows, and the lectures, and they disseminate programs to radio stations who will broadcast the For the Record shows for free. Spitfirelist.com is their website. Email, mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Snail mail address, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Now, continuing with the thread of discussion that we were engaging in at the end of side one, we're going to be taking a look at one level at a comparison between the French power elite in the run-up to World War II and the American power elite in the contemporary time. We're also going to be taking a look at offshore banking and bank secrecy, including and especially tax havens and their connection on the one hand to the looting of the public treasury in the United States, and the same thing that took place through the French power elites depositing of money in secret Swiss bank accounts. And we're also going to be taking a look at the link between offshore banking and the financing of terrorism, including the Al-Qaeda Al-Taqwa Muslim Brotherhood nexus that was targeted with the Operation Green Quest raids of 3/20/2002, and also an overlap with some of the secret financing of Saddam Hussein. In particular, we're going to be taking a look at a Swiss banker named Elio Borodori, who was apparently doing much of Saddam Hussein's secret banking through the Nassau account of the Banco del Gotardo, which is heavily overlapped with and inextricably linked with the Bank Al-Taqwa. Banco del Gotardo was also the Swiss subsidiary of the Banco Ambrosiano that we looked at in connection with the Vatican banking scandals. I'll give you some program references when we get to that part of the program. Now, this first article was authored by Lucy Commissar, whom it was my pleasure to interview in For the Record Program 387. Lucy is at the cutting edge of investigative reporting in this country with regard to offshore banking and tax secrecy. And the remarkable Lucy Commissar authored this article for Dissent Quarterly's issue of the spring of 2003. This article is titled Offshore Banking, The Secret Threat to America, by Lucy Commissar, and it begins with discussion of the French power elite in the run-up to World War II. In November of 1932, Deputy Fabien Albertin took the floor of the National Assembly in Paris to denounce tax evasion by eminent French personalities, politicians, judges, industrialists, church dignitaries, and directors of newspapers who were hiding their money in Switzerland. Quote, "The Minister of Finance knows very well that for 10 years the concern of all his predecessors has been to track down this fraud," he declared, again quoting, "However, till now the information one has gotten has been extremely vague. When documents arrive, they are formless notebooks in which holders of accounts are represented only as numbers. Employees of the banks don't know the names of account holders. These names are known only to the director of the bank, who the client forbid to correspond with them, so anxious are they to preserve anonymity," unquote. He said, quote, "If one reads the Swiss newspapers this morning, one sees that public opinion in Switzerland dreads the massive shrinking of sums that have been deposited in its banks, of which it enjoys exclusive profit," unquote. There had been a raid on a building on the Rue de la Trémoille in the aristocratic district of the Champs-Élysées, where officials of a Swiss bank had a five-room apartment. Police had passed through a crowd of impatient clients in the waiting room, entered the office, and seized all available documents. Albertin argued that the operation should have occurred earlier, as the business had gone on without interruption for 10 days. Even so, the police collected 245,000 French francs, 2,000 Swiss francs, and even more important, an index, a cash book, a file, and 10 large notebooks with 2,000 names. A parliamentarian shouted, quote, "We want to know them," unquote. Albertin answered, "The minister knows," but the finance minister declared, "Ah, no, Mr. Albertin, I don't know this list at all," unquote. And Albertin replied, quote, "I am going to satisfy your curiosity. Some will say, ah, you socialists are happy to dishonor political adversaries and show that there are classes in society," unquote. Yes, there are classes. And in this scandal, the ruling elite of society shows its selfishness and unwillingness to obey French law. Unquote. His list included deputies, senators, and judges whose role, he pointed out, was to make and apply the laws. He called them men of a particularly ticklish patriotism, unquote, who, he noted with irony, again quoting, "probably are unaware that the money they deposit abroad is lent by Switzerland to Germany," unquote. That Switzerland was Hitler's banker was already known. Albertin noted sardonically that such people never made loans to the French defense effort. He added that the list included a dozen generals, even the controller of the army. He began to name the names of the tax evader elite, including two bishops who, he said, quote, "though the kingdom isn't of this world," unquote, were able to reconcile their oaths of poverty with the desire to shelter their fortunes. They were also manufacturers of automobiles and furniture. "Names," cried a deputy. "The Peugeot brothers," Albertin replied. "The furniture maker was Léviton." He moved on to Henriette François Coty of the famous perfume family who ran a newspaper, L'Ami du Peuple, or Friend of the People, and a Monsieur Sapetre, whom Albertin took for the publisher of Le Matin, or Morning in English. Albertin declared, "There is nothing more painful, saddening, and tragic, nothing that can discourage the mass of French workers more deeply than to see every day the men who direct and inspire French opinion in the columns of their big dailies call for the nation's financial patriotism, tell of sacrifices to be asked of civil servants and war victims, and on their own part, cheat," unquote. Swiss bankers were stunned by the revelations of their clients' names. They feared that unless they could block future exposure, they might lose the deposits people had stashed with them to avoid paying their own country's taxes. To make sure that account owners' names could never be made public again, in 1934, the Swiss Confederation made it a crime for a bank employee to violate the secrecy of clients' identities. Thus, bank secrecy was born. Even law enforcement on the track of thieves could not pierce it. The elites of France and elsewhere could rest easy. Taxes would burden only the poor and middle classes. Skipping down, Lucy Commissar cites some of the various tax havens, such as the Cayman Islands, the Channel Islands, Switzerland, of course, and other countries, Liechtenstein and other countries. And she goes on later in this article to discuss some of the sums involved. She writes, "The money involved is monumental. Secrecy havens have 1.2% of the world's population and hold 26% of the world's wealth, including 31% of the net profits of U.S. multinationals. According to Merrill Lynch and Gemini Consulting's World Wealth Report for 2000, one-third of the wealth of the world's high-net-worth individuals," unquote, as banks like to call them, "nearly $6 trillion out of $17.5 trillion may now be held offshore. Some $3 trillion is in deposits in tax haven banks, and the rest is in securities held by IBCs and trusts. Experts believe that as much as half the world's capital flows through offshore centers. The International Monetary Fund says that between $600 billion and $1.5 trillion of illicit money is laundered annually, equal to 2 to 5% of global economic output. These offshore centers awash in money are the hub of a colossal underground network of crime, fraud, and corruption. And Lucy goes on to talk about organized crime, drug dealing, weapons trafficking, and in some of the material we're going to be getting to shortly, the financing of terrorism, in particular some of the entities that were targeted by the 320-2002 Operation Green Quest raids, which revealed again the Islamist link to the Republican Party. The point man in that Islamist link to the Republican Party was Grover Norquist, who is again the point man for the tax cutting for the Bush administration. Another article by Lucy Commissar was published in the American Reporter's issue of May 27th of 2003. This is volume 9, number 2112. And in this particular article, we have an account of a question that Lucy Commissar asked to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld at a meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. And I would note that Ms. Commissar is demonstrating more character and more moxie than the overwhelming majority of Americans, both in journalism and elsewhere. Again, the American Reporter, 5/27/2003. This article is Foreign Affairs. Rumsfeld queried on offshore banking reform by Lucy Commissar, an American reporter correspondent. It's datelined New York. It hasn't been reported in the U.S. press until here, now. But in Milan, Italy's chief prosecutor has obtained thousands of documents that show how, for more than 20 years, Saddam Hussein used the Western bank and corporate secrecy system to launder bribes skimmed from oil revenues to pay his security forces and buy Western arms during international embargoes. The key countries whose governments openly allow these money laundering systems to exist were Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Panama, and Nassau. Corporate registrations and bank accounts there use straw men and secrecy rules to cover up the true owners of companies and accounts. On Tuesday, May 27th, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York, and I asked him what the U.S. planned to do about this system that financed and armed Washington's latest nemesis. This was my question. Quote, "It's been shown by investigations by the prosecutor of Milan, Italy, which has gotten thousands of documents about bank accounts in Europe, particularly Switzerland and Liechtenstein, and then also Panama, that these were the accounts through which Saddam Hussein hid the rake-offs he was getting from Western companies that were buying his oil, that allowed him to get money for weapons over the 80s and 90s. This bank and corporate secrecy is what allowed this to happen. I assume the Americans know about this. Are you going to do anything about this system that allows criminals like Saddam Hussein, this was during the embargo, of course, are you going to do anything about this system that allows them to get weapons illegally?" Unquote. For the record, Rumsfeld's answer, quote, "The Department of the Treasury has been working with other countries and attempting to locate the assets that the Saddam Hussein family and regime have placed in other countries. They found some, and I'm sure they have not found additional sums, and I'm sure they're working on it," unquote. Rumsfeld clumsily sidestepped the question because the Bush administration has reversed the Clinton-era policy that attempted at least minimal reforms of the offshore system. It has blocked European efforts to pierce bank secrecy by allowing tax authorities to share information on non-residents' bank accounts. It does not want to change the offshore system because its corporate and wealthy supporters use it to evade taxes. Rumsfeld would know how that works because he was CEO of G.D. Sirlin Company, a worldwide pharmaceutical company, and of General Instrument Corporation, which deals in broadband technologies. International corporations routinely use the offshore system for transfer pricing, unquote. Corporate speak for the practice of moving bookkeeping entries around the globe so they can report near zero profits to the IRS. He said that when funds are needed in Iraq, the U.S., quote, will rely on frozen assets in the U.S. and other countries, unquote. But to be frozen, they have to be found, and to be found, the U.S. will have to follow the trails set out in the Milan documents to challenge the bank and corporate secrecy of friends and allies such as Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Panama, and Nassau. Rumsfeld says that in the new Iraq, market systems will be favored, unquote. The U.S., again quoting, will encourage moves to privatize state-owned enterprises, unquote, and that it is, again quoting, developing a plan for the oil industry based on transparency, unquote. The international oil business is notorious for using secret offshore accounts to move profits and also to bribe government officials for access to oil fields. Transparency would make that difficult. Earlier this month, Representative Henry Waxman, Democrat of California, released documents showing that Halliburton, while it was headed by Vice President Dick Cheney, set up offshore subsidiaries in places such as the Cayman Islands to hide its dealings with Iraq, Iran, and Libya, which were under U.S. embargo. If the Bush administration is serious about transparency, if it's serious about not wanting Iraq's new oil barons to use the same offshore system that skimmed profits for their predecessors, it had better reconsider its protective attitude towards shell companies and secret bank accounts. Indeed, and what we're going to look at next is an article from the London Times, the Times of London of April 13th of 2003. This is titled, Banker Who Hid Saddam's Millions. And this is a discussion of a Swiss banker named Elio Borradori. And one of the things to note here is that one of the main financial institutions in which the account, codenamed Satan, in which much of Saddam Hussein's ill-gotten gains were banked, and again, much of the money that was used was ill-gotten money from the petroleum industry. I would note, too, that the elder George Bush was the point man in utilizing the intergovernmental networks that were formed as a result of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism to effect the American portion of the arming of Saddam Hussein. The lion's share of that was actually done by European corporations, chiefly German. But note that one of the principal institutions that was used for the hiding of Saddam Hussein's millions was a Nassau account of the Banco del Gotardo, which is inextricably linked with the Bank al-Taqwa, or Nada Management, the Bank of the Muslim Brotherhood. Perfenici Barachi, who is one of the principal officials with Banco del Gotardo, is also the lawyer for Youssef Nada, a former German intelligence agent who was the head of Bank al-Taqwa, and he also handles the Swiss investments for Silvio Berlusconi, the former P2 Lodge member who is the Italian prime minister. In For the Record programs 356, 357, 359, and 387, we talk about the inextricable links between Banco del Gotardo and Nada Management, or Bank al-Taqwa. In turn, the Bank al-Taqwa is one of the principal entities that was exposed in the Operation Green Quest raids of 3/20/2002. This article from the London Times of April 13, 2003, Banker Who Hid Saddam's Millions, reads in part as follows. A financial advisor to Saddam Hussein has revealed how the Iraqi dictator channeled hundreds of millions of pounds into secretive offshore companies. For more than 10 years, Elio Borradori, a company trustee in the tax havens of Liechtenstein and Lugano, Switzerland, managed the huge commissions and consultancy fees from the Iraqi dictator's arms deals and development contracts. The money was funneled into companies controlled by Saddam's appointees operating through Panama, the Bahamas, and Switzerland. It is thought to have partly funded the dictator's palaces as well as his lavish lifestyle. Many of the millions moved in and out of an account codenamed Satan, which was originally overseen by a relative of Saddam. He was Saad al-Mahdi, but he made the mistake of falling out with Saddam and was executed, possibly for pilfering from the Satan account. A Swiss lawyer took over some of the companies. Others went into the hands of Barzan Ibrahim Hassan al-Takridi, Saddam's half-brother. Just before the first Gulf War in 1991, almost £1 billion was moved from Satan and other accounts to be hidden around the world. Italian police last month identified £300 million in one account in Geneva. The network of offshore companies remained active long after the United Nations sanctions were imposed on Iraq at the end of the first Gulf War. The Sunday Times has uncovered more than 1,000 documents, some of which confirm Bonadori's role. They also provide indications of export deals relating to Dassault and Thompson CSF, two French arms companies then state-owned, as well as to Russian firms. Although many of the documents relate to the 1980s, others suggest activity in the mid-1990s. The material will be a fillip to investigators in Italy, Switzerland, and Liechtenstein trying to untangle the web of transactions in the hunt for Saddam's billions. Bonadori, who said he met Saddam in person several times, retired some years ago to live quietly in Switzerland. But a Lugano court case brought by the al-Mahdi family and the mysterious death of one of the lawyers involved revealed documents relating to Saddam's secret network of companies. Now 75, and living on the southern shores of Lake Lugano, Bonadori admitted he was Saddam's banking advisor. In the 1970s, Bonadori was working in Lugano as a trustee for companies in Vaduz, the capital of Liechtenstein. A former cycling champion with a penchant for stylish suits, he was the perfect face of private financial advice. Imposing, charming, and discreet. Through a business associate in Italy, he was introduced to al-Takridi, then the head of Iraqi intelligence. Oil prices were soaring and Iraq was on a buying spree. Saddam, then a rising power in the government before becoming president in 1979, was keen to get a share of the multi-million pound contracts negotiated by the state. Bonadori was hired to set up companies as havens for that money. He met Saddam and was encouraged to expand the network of companies. Once, Saddam gave him a bullet engraved with his name. It was meant, Saddam said, to ensure that he was never killed, although Bonadori thought it carried a more sinister message. By 1977, the network of companies and number of deals had grown so extensive, with both overt and covert operations, that al-Mahdi was sent to Europe to oversee them under the control of al-Takridi, who was then the overall head of Saddam's financial network. Skipping down. Though he declined to discuss his work for Saddam in detail, saying he could not remember, unquote, other sources provided the documentary evidence of the money trail. The main entity was Mediterranean Enterprises Development Projects of Lugano, which had branches in New York, Tokyo, London, Paris, and other centers. It in turn controlled about 300 other companies, mainly in Liechtenstein and Panama. Three key companies called Duminta Radistal and Techno Service International of Vaduz were among those that received commissions and consultancy fees handling at least £300 million in the 1980s. Some payments, however, were staggered over the life of the contracts and stretched into the 1990s. There were, for example, commission payments related to a missile site near Mosul in northern Iraq, which according to Italian authorities was not completed until the mid-1990s, even though such work was supposed to stop after the Gulf War. To cover the tracks, much of the money passed through account number 70513 at the Banco del Gotardo in Nassau in the Bahamas, the Satan account. One banking slip indicated a payment as recently as December of 1998. Note that Lugano, Switzerland is the epicenter of the Banco del Gottardo, inextricably linked with the Lugano-based Bank al-Taqwa, one of the bank of the Muslim Brotherhood, and one of the principal elements involved in the 320-2002 Operation Green Quest raids. Note that Lugano, Switzerland has, since the end of World War I, also been the epicenter for the Thyssen-Bornemisza enterprise, one of the principal industrial enterprises of the Third Reich, from which much of the Bush family's economic largesse has sprung. And note also that the Thyssen-Bornemisza enterprise, now ThyssenKrupp, again is based in Lugano, Switzerland, like Banco del Gottardo and like the bank al-Taqwa. After Almaty's death, the overt tier of the network was run down, but the secretive side continued. Though who took control after the restructuring is disputed, it seems Saddam's system of raking off commissions continued. And after discussing some of the firms involved with this continued covert financing, skipping down, years after the death of Almaty, his family decided to pursue some of the millions that had washed through the network of offshore companies. They hired Gianluca Borscaro, a Swiss lawyer, to bring a case which named, among others, Borodori's accountant and other trustees. In defense against Boscaro's claim, a welter of documents was produced which aimed to show that most of the assets had been transferred out of the offshore network. But they also provided clear evidence that the ultimate beneficiary of the companies was the Iraqi regime and not Saad al-Mahdi. Through the legal action, Boscaro secured evidence of how, at least in part, Saddam had siphoned off a fortune and hidden it around the world. Increasingly paranoid about his own safety, Boscaro told one friend that should anything untoward happen to him, the documents should be brought to public attention. In the midst of a legal action in August of last year, Boscaro, an adventurous man in his 40s, died while taking time off from the case to relax in the foothills of the Piedmont Mountains. At around 7:30 p.m. on a clear sunny evening, he was floating high in the sky beneath a paraglider. Suddenly, the canopy seemed to stall. Boscaro plunged to his death. It's a dangerous sport, and such accidents are not uncommon, but officials who examined the canopy noticed that cords were damaged. Police concluded it was an accident, although friends of Boscaro dispute their findings. Accident or murder? It may never be known, but for Saddam, the end was nearing anyway. Within months, coalition troops were on their way to Kuwait. However, the many millions Saddam siphoned off for his own purposes may never be fully traced, let alone recovered. Stephen Gray, Nick Fielding, John Ungood Thomas, Edine Hamzik, Paolo Fusi, and Eben Black contributed to that story. Again, Lugano, Switzerland, the epicenter for the Banco del Gottardo and the Satan account, the epicenter for Bank al-Taqwa, the epicenter of the Thyssen-Bornemisza organization from which the Bush family economic largesse largely sprang, and also an epicenter of the Bormann organization. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 412, The Engineer Intends to Wreck the Train, being recorded on June 2nd of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.